This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And today's guest is Bioni Samp. Good afternoon, Bioni.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening in.
And Bioni, you are you a sound artist or musician? Or,
yeah, performance mainly. I perform a kind of act where I play my own homemade synthesizers, which are based on bees, and I usually perform in my bee suit, and all my equipment is homemade.
Right. Okay. And you have achieved some fame, shall we say, recently.
You
appeared in is it Vice magazine?
Yeah.
As what was the title? What was the honour you received?
I'm one of 100 people who got this accolade, Human of the Year, for my kind of support of bees and the whole sort of eco side of it with my music stuff and performance, I guess. That's I don't know really who chooses these people, but I was honoured to be mentioned in it anyway.
Yeah. Is this an annual award or?
Yeah, so it's for last year.
So for this year at least you're one of the top 100 humans.
Yeah, so it's been quite amazing since that happened, because I've had a lot of people contact me to interview me and be on TV programs and stuff. I've been filming a whole series of TV things at my bee house, which is a purpose-built building for keeping bees in, made of timber frame, and that's in a London park.
Okay. Which one?
Finsbury Park.
Right. Okay.
And what I've been doing there for 10 years is teaching beekeeping, and I started recording bees there, mainly to begin with to get some cool bee sounds, but also because I was interested in predicting swarming as well. And just before a beehive swarms, it gets very, very loud, and people have been recording bees trying to predict swarming since the 1950s on tape and stuff. So what I can do is I've got a frame I've made, which is like a bee frame, and I put that inside, and it's got some microphones on it. So you can get a really good kind of stereo recording of bees within the hive.
Right.
So
is this construction, is it like a large hive, or is that not, would that not be an accurate sort of...
It's like a shed, and it has about 14 different types of beehives inside.
Oh, yeah.
But their entrances for the bees is on the outside. It's not like a shed full of bees. It only gets full of bees when I take the lid off an individual hive.
So each hive has its own entrance exit on
yeah,
the outside of the shed,
right.
So they
yeah.
can only access their own hive.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. And it has some big skylights to let bees out when there's too many inside.
Yeah, right.
It can
right.
get a bit intense with like thousands of bees flying around you.
Yeah.
So I open these skylights and then they all fly out. But yeah, I've been keeping bees there for well over 10 years.
So what came first, the music or sound aspect or the bees? What was your...
Well, I come from Yorkshire and I was brought up, my father had a kind of small holding with various animals, and there was a pig farm on one side, and our neighbours kept bees, and I got really interested in bees quite young. I was only about 6 or 7, and I was kind of fascinated with them because I'd been looking after chickens as well. My father had about 50 of them. And I'd been helping out with the pigs. So I'd been doing all this before, but bees were seen as still a bit too dangerous for a child. But right. when I got to about 7, I was kind of shown them and kind of really got excited about, you know, social insects. You know, some people are interested in dinosaurs and stuff, but for me it was like ants and bees and stuff right. I quite liked. And I'd often go walk next door and go and see them flying in and out, just to sort of see that. I really enjoyed it.
Right.
So as I got older, I went and did a, you know, film and TV degree, and I worked as a sound recordist. And I always kept recording a lot of nature stuff, as well as kind of industrial stuff. I mean, where I'm from in Yorkshire, it's a bit like kind of Sheffield, but with mining, more mining.
Hmm. Whereabouts is it?
Castleford.
Right.
Home of Henry Moore.
Right.
So, you know, so I'm quite into sculpture.
We were having a sort of brief Yorkshire conversation.
Yeah.
Because I mentioned that my grandfather used to be in Leeds.
And, yeah.
That sort of rang a bell with you, some aspects of the company in Leeds and so on.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still very fond of Yorkshire, and I like to return often. And when I do go back, I like to do some sound recordings. But not just of natural things, but I like a lot of industrial recordings as well. I've recorded stuff at... you know, mines before they're closed, and mm-hmm. also a lot of industrial plants around there. I've recorded the kind of background noise to this. And I like this kind of juxtaposition of kind of industrial and kind of nature right next to each other, which you get in Yorkshire.
Doesn't one sort of threaten the other?
It does, and that's, it's interesting to be right on that kind of fence, as you might call it,
right.
you know. And where does the pollution from industry wash over into nature?
Right.
And that's, you know, a lot of the kind of ideas I try and put into my kind of art performance
right.
is sort of...
But bees are under threat at the moment, aren't they? Is
yeah.
It's serious, in a state of crisis almost.
Yeah. Bees... are not doing well in a lot of places due to, well, a variety of reasons, climate change and industrialised farming being one of the main problems. But there's also a huge movement to save and conserve bees and educate with bees, you know, environmental issues.
So is it as bad as...
It's bad, but in our lifetime, you know, half the natural world has disappeared. So it's only a element within that. I mean, you know, in the last 20 years, half the orangutans have been, you know, killed for palm oil.
Right.
So it's, bees are just a small part of a huge environmental nightmare, basically.
But isn't it, I mean, the bits that I've read suggest that the bees are an absolutely crucial part of pollination,
I mean,
and so on.
Pollination for stuff we eat comes from bees, and, you know, I don't see how robots immediately can, you know, replace billions of bees. So,
no.
And I don't really want robots to replace them anyway, but...
What, is this like robot insects you mean?
Yeah,
like
robot kind of pollinators.
Oh, is that an idea?
They're already out there, yeah.
Are they really?
Yeah, well, especially in China. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But
I've never heard
where
that.
Labour's cheap, they just get people with a paintbrush and a pot of pollen, and they get them up a ladder in the tree, and they have to actually paint each flower to put the pollen on, because there's no bees in that area.
Oh, right.
So you can imagine how many flowers are on one cherry tree, for example.
Right.
Well, it'd be a long job to pollinate that.
Does that work?
It does work, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. All is not lost, then.
It's no, but the problem is with it, is because you've got all the same pollen, you're not getting a genetic variety of pollination within the tree. You're getting kind of one strain of pollen. It's not a mixture of everything what's in the air, what bees are picking up.
Right.
It's a very defined, systematic end result of pollen.
Right.
If that makes sense.
No,
it's a bit
right.
confusing.
I should say, I think I called you Bioni Samp, but
it's,
in fact it's,
yeah,
it's Bioni.
No, it's Bioni.
It's spelled B-I-O-N-I. Not,
yeah, but
in case people think
I like
it sounds
to say
like
it in the Italian way.
Okay.
There was a composer called Bioni in the 18th century.
Right.
I have a lot of Italian friends, and I've released some music on an Italian label. So I took the name from that composer.
Right.
Because I like the bee aspect.
Yes.
You know, but I didn't want to be called bee myself.
But also it sounds like bio, doesn't it? Like sort of a bit of biological and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
But where's the samp come from?
I think it's just short for sample in the end.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. As in sampling sounds.
Yeah. But I also remain kind of anonymous with what I'm doing. I prefer to be just a kind of icon of what my intentions are, not necessarily a name or a number. So I always perform in my bee suit anonymously. I'm not wearing it today because it's about 28 degrees here, but I will be on stage, don't worry.
Right. Okay.
I like to keep my name anonymous as well. I like the idea of Banksy, you know, he doesn't reveal his name, and he's an icon for, you know, in some ways you might call it protest art of some sort, you know, painting his slogans on the wall and his stuff. And I like how he's just an icon for that.
Right.
And I don't need to know there is, you know, I don't know, from Bristol or wherever, you know what I mean? I don't want the baggage with the actual statement. I just want the statement. Because somebody was saying, well, how do you work on stuff, you know, like my synths and stuff? And I say, well, for a start, I very rarely discuss it. I just do it. I'm a kind of maker person, not a discusser. I mean, okay, I'll pontificate on here for a bit about what I'm doing because that's of interest. But I'm not, because I think once you can over-discuss it, and then the kind of idea fades away a bit before you've done it.
Okay.
So I like to be kind of proactive in creating new sounds or whatever.
Right. So do the bees take part in your performances, or is it actual live bees? Or?
No, because bees don't really like noise or vibration. I do a bit of meditating and playing my instruments near them at my bee house, but it's usually quite gentle, kind of meditative sounds. Mm. But when I perform loud, part of my set can be kind of, you know, quite noisy with some sort of, you know, heavy kind of noises and beats and stuff. And I think, and people go, oh, I thought it was going to be all kind of relaxing, like Kitaro or something. Mm-hmm. But I always say, well, you know, bees are quite angry. And I sometimes channel a bit of that. And they're very angry towards humans at the moment, of course, for environmental reasons.
Right.
So I think I kind of pick up on their frustration.
Do you think they recognise us as the enemy?
I mean, yeah,
is there a sort of instinctive...
I think they're worried.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, so my sound can be a bit angry, a bit noisy when it gets going full on. And quite raw because all my homemade equipment sounds, I hope, original. So I've brought a couple of things along here, and I've brought a few recordings I've done at my bee house.
Okay.
So I don't.
Should we play something?
Yeah.
Well,
what I'll do is I'll play this one called "Journey to the Centre of the Beehive," and the idea behind this little piece was that it's as if your head is inside the beehive, and it's kind of recorded with binaural processing and stuff.
Mm.
So it's kind of like you've got the hive on your head,
right.
You know.
Right.
And then I've added some bee sounds, which are emulations from my synthesizers, and kind of mixed it all together. So I'll
okay.
just...
All right, so, I'll just bring this up.
Yeah. So it should be just coming in now.
I can hear something. Here they come.
Thank you.
was that?
I think that was about 60,000.
Wow. I played a track last week by Jonathan Bepler for it was a soundtrack to a Cremaster film, and it says on the CD that they claimed that there are 200,000 bees, and I sort of questioned that. I thought, how on earth would they know how many bees were on that recording? How do you assess? Is there any way of assessing it, or do you just kind of gauge it by, you know, you look at the density of the cloud and sort of?
I think I'd need to know how many hives that come from, but I think I could work it out. Nice. Because it's if it was kind of like now, springtime, there'd only be about half the amount in the hive, because they're still building up. The queen's, you know, laying about 2,000 eggs a day at the moment.
Right.
So it's build up over a few months. So in about July, they'll be kind of peaking at about 60,000. So
per hive?
Yeah, right. So that was probably, wow, if it was 200,000 bees, it'd probably be four or five
what
hives.
What size of hive is that? I can't try to imagine they kind of...
Well, the kind of standard size, it doesn't really vary much, really.
Okay.
Each colony's quite a specific size at each month of the year, and it doesn't really go above or below that, if you've got a bigger hive. It only increases a little bit more, really.
So is that like one of these things that I would have known like as a child, like these wooden sort of things that came apart?
Yeah.
That's an average hive.
That's an average hive.
And one of those would take 60,000?
Yeah, at the peak of the summer.
Wow.
And then in the winter, maybe like a couple of thousand, you know, because they're really slimmed down for kind of hibernation, huddling together. So they're always there's always loads in the summer and hardly any in the winter, because all they do in the winter is they kind of cluster into a ball, and they make sure the queen's in the middle. She's 37.5 degrees body temperature, and it needs to be kept exactly at that, which is same temperature as us. And if she drops below that, because she's been inseminated, she can go infertile. So it's really important that she keeps warm throughout the winter. Mm. Otherwise, when she starts laying again in spring, she could have partial infertility or full infertility.
Mm.
And at that point, you'd replace that queen with a new one.
I was going to say, what happens if the queen dies? I mean, if that's at the end of that particular community, or
no, the workers quickly raise another queen within about 3 weeks, and that'd be like the daughter. So, how bees work is in the swarming period, instead of like humans where children leave the home and parents stay in the home, it's the other way around. So with bees, it's the parent what leaves the home with half the bees and leaves the daughter in the hive with half the bees.
Right.
So if you can catch a swarm or predict a swarm, because you don't know when it's going to happen, you know that around the time it is going to happen, the sound of the hive is, it's like a roar, you know, it's really kind of active sound. And if you look at like recordings over a whole year, you'd see around the swarming time it really peak at a noise level two or three times louder than in the winter, for example. So around the time of swarming, if you can then transfer the new queen into a new hive with half the bees artificially, effectively, then you can have a new colony.
Right.
So you literally split in your hive, and because bees are so expensive to buy these days, you've just made yourself £200, because A small colony of bees now is about £200.
Right.
So if half your bees fly off, you've literally lost half your colony.
Right.
And it'll take a while for it to build up.
Hmm. So there's always daughters in reserve, in effect, then?
They can be called into reserve, yeah.
Right.
If the queen's infertile, the workers know that, and they'll make plans to replace her.
Right. Yeah,
so
right.
Be off with her head, basically.
Right.
So, yeah, I've been recording bees and then making some synthesizers, which kind of bee frequency emulations. So inside a hive, there's three types of bee. There's the queen, workers, lots of them, and then there's some drone bees, which are male bees, which don't do a lot apart from try and mate with queens. They're actually quite lazy. They sit around doing nothing. They get fed by workers. People used to think they used to do a bit of guarding at the hive at the front, but apparently they don't. They just like to go and look out the front of the hive and then have a smell, see if they can smell a virgin queen.
Right.
And then if there's nothing happening, they just go back in and wait to be fed again.
Mm. Well, can a colony ever have more than one queen, or is that just an impossibility?
No, they usually fight. So there's always... Because what happens is it's the queen what controls the whole colony through her pheromones, you see. So you can't have two sets of pheromones in a hive, because one smell will be louder than the other, and bees will change allegiance to whoever's got the most powerful smell, you see. So once the queen activates this smell, all the other bees just fall into line under her.
So would this, if there were to be a second queen, would that bee have to leave the colony, or would it just wouldn't happen? It's just
no, she'd stay in the colony.
Oh.
And...
It would just be inactive or something?
Yeah.
So she'd be like a reserve then, I suppose?
No, she's not a reserve. She's the next generation.
Okay.
She'd stay in the hive, and the mother would leave with half the bees, leaving her a nice hive to live in. And the mother would then take half the bees and look for a new home, you see. So they might hang around on the tree for a few days while they find a suitable place.
Right.
And then what happens is the scout bees go off and they look for a place what's got exactly the right volume for a colony. So they can fly into a box and somehow estimate its exact volume. And then take that information back to the hive and say, to the colony, and say, hey, this is a really good home here. And it's warm, it's not damp, like that.
Yeah.
And there's enough space for everybody to fit inside, which is important.
Right.
And maybe even space for it to expand to store extra honey stores for winter.
Right. So what is the purpose of the swarm exactly? Why do they...
Well, it's just the next generation. It's like children.
Yeah, but don't they... I was under the impression that if they get angry, they the whole lot will suddenly swarm up into the air.
No, it's a myth, actually. Ah. When they're swarming, they're actually very placid, because before the mother leaves the hive with half the bees, they all... they all gorge themselves on honey, so they're kind of well fed, and they take an extra supply of honey in their honey sack to start the next colony off, next hive location off.
Right.
So when they're actually well fed like that, they can't bend round to sting you, and they're very calm because they've eaten,
Right.
You know, when people have eaten these, you can become calm as well.
Right.
So a swarm's very unlikely to sting you, because they're only interested really in finding a new home.
Right.
They're not interested in stinging you.
Yeah, that's interesting because my grandmother in Holland, she apparently once got a load of bees in her hair.
Wow.
And the story I was always told was that the bees had swarmed and had sort of somehow got, you know, caught, and she had to have all her hair cut off to get the bees out.
Wow.
They were sort of getting stuck in there. But, so that wouldn't have been an angry swarm then. That's just a sort of, that's just an accident.
I think it must have been some, maybe she was using an early version of honey shampoo or something. She had a beehive haircut.
This is in Holland, and my grandfather did have a bunch of hives. He had a few hives, and they used to make their own honey. You know, he'd put it in, put it in jars, and so it was one of the things there. But she must have just got too close to the hives on a bad day or something.
Yeah.
But
so in the hive, there's these three bees: the queen, the worker, and the drone.
Yeah.
And they've all got their own frequency range. You see, so
are they distinct? Can you see which ones are which quite clearly?
Oh yeah. Yeah, the drones are kind of quite sort of fat-ish shaped.
Right.
Queen's kind of longer and a bit bigger and thin.
Okay.
And the workers are the smallest out of the three.
Right.
And they've all got their own sound as well. The queen's got this very high-pitched sort of piping sound.
What creates the sound?
Just the buzzing.
Just the wings?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And then the drone bee is kind of like, you know, kind of baritone, kind of more, a bit more bassy.
Right.
That's the deepest. And then the workers are all a kind of mid-range note. And these frequencies have been, you know, analysed by scientists and stuff. And all I did was I just capped some oscillators into these ranges and then put them into a synthesizer. And I've been playing with these ideas of three notes for quite a while now. And because I was brought up with kind of punk music and stuff, three notes was very appealing because most of my favourite kind of punk tracks were all three notes anyway, you know.
Yeah. Strangely enough, I'm just reading a book. There's a book out, it's been out for a while, by Billy Bragg about skiffle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which seems to be a sort of, you know, a proto-punk thing, because they apparently only had, like, three chords.
But it was
like a sort of...
Three chords.
You know, T-chest double bass and a washboard and three chords on the guitar, and that was it. So there was, like, a sort of pre-punk-type music form.
Yeah.
Which is sort of taps into this kind of thing. So the music you make, I mean, are you making... Well, do you make music out of it?
I use the B sounds as a sort of inspiration or starting point. It may be I kind of layer these sounds and abstract them in the background, or I can filter them in different ways. Or what I've started doing is putting them onto this synthesizer I have here. And it runs some software.
I'm just trying to catch sight of it. Is this your homemade synthesizer?
Yeah.
It looks like it's in a sort of like a Tupperware box, type plastic storage box.
It is,
full of wires. It's and that's completely homemade.
Yeah, so and it's... It runs this free software from Queen Mary University called Bella. And that's great for doing music with because it's got low latency.
Right.
And it enables you, in my case, which is why I really like it, is you can put your own sounds on it and you can modify it in any way using the software. But it's quite easy to understand.
Right.
And how it works is I've collected some... Well, I'll switch it on.
Okay, I'll bring the sound up. You can play something off it if you want.
It'll take a minute just to kind of load up, though.
Okay.
It has to load the... So how it works is they're not actual... The original samples I've taken, let's say, from inside a beehive, then I've turned those samples into partials, which is... Instead of it being the actual sample itself, it's a series of oscillators which recreate that sample. And by doing that, it makes the sound elastic, so you can stretch it and manipulate it a lot more than a normal sample, which kind of deteriorates the more you do those abstractions to it. But with this, it kind of joins everything together. So I'm going to try and do a little... It's switched on now.
So is this a sort of improvised thing? Is this something you're doing off the cuff, as it were?
Yeah, I'm just going to... I've got a lot of B sounds on here, and I'm going to try and play a few... sort of manipulating these sounds so you can, you know, you can pitch them down and they don't kind of all go noisy.
Have you ever played the B sounds back to the Bs?
Yeah they seem to like it.
Okay.
I mean I don't play them too loud, just with a small speaker, but
they don't find it disturbing. They don't think it's another kind of a colony invading them or something.
No, I think they know they're not natural sounds.
Are they aggressive kind of towards each other? I mean, are they territorial?
They are a bit, yeah.
What would happen? They just veer off, or they sort of, you'd have a skirmish?
They tend to sting other people who come beekeeping, but they don't tend to sting me. And this is because they've got as good a smell as a bloodhound, and they can really smell people. Right. And I've noticed that as soon as anybody new comes along, a bee lands on the shoulder or on the glove, smells them, and then quickly goes back in the hive. And I believe it tells the others that people are okay or not.
Okay.
You know, because when people have been, if people who've had too many sugary drinks, they don't seem to like people like that.
Right.
But I think, like dogs, the sense, you know, kind of anxiety, stress, stuff like that.
Yeah. And is that seen as a sign of weakness then?
I don't know. It's seen as a temperamental person who might not be trustworthy, you know.
Okay.
So the light kind of consistency, I like to visit them more or less at the kind of same time every week and stuff like that.
Right, they like routine.
Yeah, I like a bit of routine as well.
Okay, right. So tell me a bit more about your performing then. I mean, where do you perform, and what sort of events are they?
Well, I've been doing a whole series of performances in various countries, going around, mainly kind of environmentally kind of aware art galleries or festivals and stuff like that. And people seem to really like it, especially in Central Europe. I've had a lot of interest from people in Czechia, and I've done a few performances in Prague, and people are very supportive there, and there's a lot of beekeepers, and I quite like that beekeeping's quite a serious thing there, whereas in Britain I've always thought it's a kind of gentleman's hobby, kind of element to it, which I don't really like because I come from a kind of farming background in some ways. So
is there kind of like organized bee farming, you know, like huge kind of
there's just really good network of kind of people who are supportive towards bees. And when I did this gallery show in Prague, about 200 beekeepers turned up, and it was in the sort of papers, and I did an interview and stuff like that. And
so do they like what you're doing?
They really like it, because I mean, not everybody likes my kind of music, because it can be a bit noisy for some people, but they kind of get the idea of it, you know. But I do tailor what I'm doing kind of new every time, with and I think about the audience and what the sort of venue allows in some ways, you know. So if it's kind of you know, a more kind of dance music industrial night, I make sounds around that as well, and for me that shows off the kind of you know, the kind of channeling of the bees and stuff, their kind of angry side, you know, because they do, you know, they are quite dangerous. I mean, if bees were totally harmless, people would be keeping them in the kitchen cupboards, you know, and stuff like that, and they'd have a little tap underneath and they'd just have some honey for their tea or something. But they're not, they're actually, you know, they can sting you to death,
right?
There's an element of danger.
But do they, is there a kind of, if they decide to do that, say, I mean, let's say they deemed somebody to be the enemy or whatever, I mean, there'd be a signal that went through and they'd all go for that person.
If one stings you, it gives off a smell which attracts the others to sting you. So you never usually get stung once.
Best thing to do in such an event?
Three at a time. Well, wasp stings are actually worse than bee stings, so I'd avoid sugary drinks, especially at festivals, because in the part where we are, a lot of people get stung on the mouth through drinking, you know, drinks, get stung on the lip or the tongue. Right.
But is there anything you can do to I mean, if you felt like there were thousands of them suddenly coming towards you?
Yeah, you've got to be careful that you've not got anaphylactic shock. Know, some one in a thousand people have got that.
Right.
So, you know, you'd have to get to hospital as soon as you could.
Right.
But, you know, there's a few cures. You can put a bit of vinegar on, or some people say rub an aspirin onto it. But usually bee stings are not too bad, and it's the original acupuncture, I always say. And it really loosens up your joints
get
stung, because it's a natural cortisone. So people with quite serious ME have this thing called bee sting therapy, which is a natural cortisone, because synthesized cortisone, if you take it all the time, it ruins your liver, apparently. But bees is a natural version.
So if you're doing a performance and it requires a beat, as it were, do you just add a beat to
I like to make beats based on bees and timings of bees, and I like to use you know, kind of software, not only to analyse bee frequencies, but to analyse the rhythm of the buzzing. So you can use software like MaxMSP. It's sort of a bit for geeks, but it's pretty cool for making your own music and sounds.
Right.
And say you've got a series of buzzing, you can put the software on it and it'll analyse where those are, and then you've got the timing for that.
Right. So could we hear an example of your more beat-orientated...
This track was just kind of made from kind of a hi-hat pattern, but made on an irregular kind of MIDI, which I'd extracted from bee buzzing.
Right.
And it's a kind of tapping sound of some sort, but that's one of the problems. If when you put microphones in the hive, the bees are interested in them, and they tap the legs on them. Oh. And if you put a little, headphone cover on top, the legs get stuck in them. So
right.
with mites, you've got kind of two sounds you're going to get extra, which is one, a little tapping sound with the legs.
Right.
And then if you put the little headphone cover on, they get their legs
get
trapped
stuck in
and then
it,
they get really, really angry.
Ah.
So I kind of alternate between the two you know, for a bit of variety. But
I recorded some crickets once in the south of France. And
yeah.
I put this microphone in the long grass and a cricket sat on the microphone.
Wow.
When I got the headphones.
Yeah.
I thought, my God, what is that sound? And it was like this, like, you know, incredibly, I mean, a real like interference, like,
yeah.
Zzz, like that.
Mm.
And it was amazing sound, actually. I've still got the recording, but I wonder if does a bee sort of, when you get a similar thing from a bee getting trapped in the microphone? Or?
Yeah, very, very angry. So I'll play this and then
okay.
I'll play a few bee sounds on top of it, kind of as it goes along. So this is a release from my 2012 EP called The Island.
So you were saying that that's quite distorted, that
it's not,
that
it's
the
not,
way it's playing back
not
on
sure.
this system. Quite not quite sure why it's overloading the system quite to such an extent. But yeah, so that's from an EP.
I've just finished a new EP. I was going to try and play a track from that as well.
Okay.
So
I'm just going to briefly make a couple of quick announcements, actually, because this event taking place this weekend. I think it starts tonight and tomorrow at King's Place.
Which
I mentioned last week, which is sort of about this sort of interspecies kind of, and they've got 176 snails which have got diodes attached to them and so on. So that's it performing. So that's one thing. I think that's tonight. That's at King's Place at the back of St Pancras. And briefly, on Saturday, the 28th of April, my film, Heated Gloves, will be shown at a new venue called the Star and Shadow Cinema, Warwick Street, Heaton, Newcastle upon Tyne. And this is as part of something called the Deep Adaptation Film Weekend, which is 2 days of experimental and artist films, which explore alternative ways of living and creating outside of the dominant narratives of neoliberal society. This programme of screenings has been developed in collaboration with artist Lee Miller as curator. So that's my film, Heated Gloves, the life of Captain Morris Seddon, and that starts at 7:30 at the Star and Shadow Cinema, Newcastle. OK, but back to this week's guest, which is Bione Samp, beekeeper and bee orchestrator.
Yeah.
Perhaps. I'm afraid, so we're a little bit disappointed with the reproduction of the... You think it's overloading the system somewhat.
Yeah.
Is there anything you can play?
Yeah, I've got something I'd like to play from my new album, what's coming out soon.
Right.
On Akinito Records.
Okay.
And I hope...
Is this literally a vinyl?
I hope it plays okay.
I'll
see if I can get it to come up. Playing now.
It is.
Yeah.
So this is available as a digital release, you were saying?
Yeah, this will be coming out soon. I've just finished it, it's along with a few other tracks on the same label.
Okay.
And
so should people go to your website?
Go to my website, bionisamp.org,
So that's spelled bioni.org.
Yeah.
To get information.
Yeah.
And you're playing in Hamburg?
Yeah, I'm doing a gig in Hamburg on the MS Stubnitz at Primal Uproar 3. And I'm also doing, on the 20th of May, a fundraiser for the Bee House in Finsbury Park, if anybody wants to come along to that. So in the afternoon, it will be a kind of open day.
Which date is that again?
It's Sunday the 20th of May.
Oh, okay, right.
And I've got about 8 sound sculptures I'm going to be showing around the Bee House as a kind of mini kind of magic bee garden. That's the sort of theme. And then in the evening, there's going to be myself and a load of other friends performing at New River Studios to raise some money for repairs and some new bees and some new bee suits.
Right.
So that's what I'm up to at the moment.
Right. Been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM with Bioni Samp, and you always wear the full bee suit when you perform.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, I don't wear the trousers usually.
Oh,
but
no.
I wear the actual suit.
Right. Okay.
And I like to wear this vintage one. I used to have an allotment, and It's strange because people always seem to give me bees when they're going emigrating or stuff like that. So somebody gave me some bees, and there was a little shed with a few frames and stuff in. And at the back of the shed, I saw this old vintage bee suit.
Wow.
And it was all covered in dust and sort of spiders and stuff. So I washed that. And I thought, oh, I quite like it. It's got an original 1940s look to it. So I've always worn that. I gave it a wash, and I used some natural dyes on it to kind of give it a kind of speckled effect.
Right.
To
I suppose it's much heavier than the modern ones, isn't it?
Yeah, a bit. It's canvas.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, it's very distinct looking.
You
can see me wearing it on my website.
Okay, right. And what's you have like gauze that you look through?
Yeah. It's fully protective.
Right.
But it did have a hole in the back. I kind of stuck a patch on the back, so I've got a badge what says sunshine on the back. Because bees like light and sunshine, and all my synthesizers operate through light.
Thanks very much to Bioni Samp for coming in today. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks everybody.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.